welcome to Food Stuff. I'm Lauren Volkbaum.
And I'm Annie Reese.
And today, we're talking about food delivery and takeout.
Yes.
And this is a topic that's been on my mind for a while because since moving to a city and becoming a city girl, I have become quite spoiled with delivery, that I can get it at any time.
Oh, yeah, just about anything you want. I mean, as long as what you want is kind of like cheap Chinese food.
Or pizza.
Or pizza, yeah.
I have had a bit of a scandal I've uncovered in my building because I've had a bad habit of falling asleep when I order food, right? And so I wake up and I go outside and it's not there and I have 13 angry voicemails and I feel terrible about it. But, you know, what can I do?
Sure.
Well, it turns out there's somebody in my building that's pretending to be my boyfriend. And
what?
He's been claiming my delivery food.
Oh, nuh-uh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
So right now, I'm trying to set a trap.
Food delivery trap?
Yes. Oh. I've narrowed it down to two people, I suspect. And my group of friends is, they're like, it's like a romantic comedy. You like the same foods. I'm like, no.
This is the opposite of a meat cute.
Yes. This is an enemy that has been made. But I've been traveling recently and discovered that delivery isn't as big in a couple of countries I've been to. Like in Japan, it wasn't that big of a thing, or at least where I was, which is pretty big cities. And in South Africa, it wasn't that big of a thing. So it's been on my mind for a while, the history of this and how did it get started and why did it take off in certain places and not others?
The answers to this and more. But first, delivery and or takeout. What is it?
Oh, my goodness. We didn't do the research, Lauren. I don't know. No, we know.
All right. You know, when you want food from a restaurant, but instead of like sitting down and eating there, you want to take the food with you somewhere else, hypothetically to your home.
Yeah.
Or you have it delivered directly to your home, either by a restaurant employee, a courier, that's more traditional, or by a third-party service of some kind.
There you go. And if we look at delivery numbers, 6% of Americans order takeout on an average day, and pizza is the most delivered food item. You probably are not surprised by that at all. Over 1 billion are delivered a year in the United States.
Ooh.
In 2017, Americans spent a collective $3.5 billion on food delivery.
Ooh.
And this seems like a lot. The pizza thing totally is. But when we look at that 6% number, it only accounted for 3% total restaurant transactions in 2017. Some restaurants will have way more, like pizza places, and others way less. Still, the market is moving more and more in the delivery direction,
oh, yeah.
And some restaurants are designing their floor plans and or menus around being delivery friendly. You've probably been to plenty of restaurants that already have a separate window or a counter for delivery or takeout orders.
Globally, the market is worth $101 billion per year, and accounts for about 1% of the total world food market and 4% of restaurant sales.
Yep. And according to statistics provided by DoorDash, 80% of American restaurants don't offer delivery. And of those that do, Grubhub claims that 95% of them are still relying on paper menus.
Again, globally, about two-thirds of delivery orders are still placed by phone.
What?
Market researcher McKinsey believes that that'll flip to two-thirds being placed online sometime after 2020.
Mm-hmm. Over $1 billion in 2014 was invested in food delivery technology, from meal kits to grocery delivery. Some restaurants have started adding space for delivery drivers specifically instead of more seating in the restaurant.
Or perhaps seating at all.
Yes, perhaps.
It's a market with this huge perceived potential. Grubhub's marketing budget in 2015 was over $85 million, and the top five global companies were worth, as of 2016, over $12 billion together.
Ooh, yeah.
And people who use these new electronic-type services, many of which handle everything from the ordering to the delivery for the customer, rather than simply relaying the order to the restaurant and having it handle the delivery, these customers are very particular. Most of them order from home instead of the workplace, or for home, 82%. They will stick with whatever app they downloaded first.
Oh, really?
Like 80%. And they will not tolerate waiting more than an hour.
They won't? Oh, my goodness.
I know.
Well, Atlanta, We haven't reached that yet. I was expecting to find more articles, and maybe I just wasn't specifically looking for it, but I was expecting to find more articles about these millennials and they're so antisocial and they're staying indoors and they don't want to go to restaurants. And I did read a couple of years ago a bunch of articles about how people are eating alone in restaurants more often.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's becoming more of a thing. So I'm kind of, oh yeah, they're probably out there and I just didn't run into
them. Yeah, we'll have to check out that, like the societal implications.
Yes.
Of these sorts of things in another episode.
Absolutely. And that food delivery technology has changed the types of foods that can be delivered.
Oh, right.
Yes. Remember that whole hullabaloo about the eggs and food kits?
I don't.
You don't? I remember that. It was like, wow, they're delivering eggs now. And in countries like France, for example, which has been a holdout in delivery options, have been traditionally fairly limited until the introductions of services like Take Eat Easy.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep. Uber Eats and Foodora. According to Take It, I can't even do it. Take Eat Easy spokespeople, after launching in Paris in 2014, they've seen monthly growth in the double digits.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the employees of these services go, several lawsuits against food delivery companies or services have been in the news lately. DoorDash, Grubhub, and Postmates have all been accused of misclassifying employees as independent contractors so as to avoid paying them the minimum wage or giving them benefits.
Yeah.
This is all ongoing currently. Like, things are being settled and then more lawsuits and being settled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all up in the air, but we certainly hope that companies shape up and treat people like people.
Yes, we certainly do. But for a nice people note, Pizza Hut employees use kayaks to deliver pizza to people trapped during Hurricane Harvey.
Oh.
Which I found kind of lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
And takeout and delivery has a pretty interesting history, I've got to say.
Yeah, it goes back further than I thought it was going to.
Yes.
And we'll get into that, but first, let's get into a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. Okay, so takeout food, or food that passersby would grab and go, goes all the way back to ancient Rome and the Aztecs, and it probably goes back further than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just the first evidence that we have.
Yes, exactly. Delivery is a bit younger. Wealthy dwellers of 14th century Paris could expect the butcher to deliver their product straight to their homes. I guess you could kind of classify a lot of those traveling, like the Muffin Man.
Sure.
Sort of fits in there. In the U.S., food delivery got its start in the 18th century. That's what the records indicate, anyway. A handful of hotels in big cities offered whatever meal it was that they cooked that day for takeout. They would package it for you, as long as you could send someone, usually a servant, to go and pick it up. Some restaurants would deliver smaller items like oysters or pastries.
Oyster delivery was so big.
I know. That was one of the most surprising things of this whole episode to me. Just delivering oysters. And we'll be mentioning it a bit more, believe you me.
Mm-hmm.
But first, let's talk about this. Okay, the legend goes that the first pizza delivery occurred in Italy in 1889. Pizza had already been around for a while in Italy, and it was really popular item for the working class, but it was in a particular area. And when Italy united all these previously disparate towns and cities, pizza, which had been this more regional thing, became more available countrywide. And the first queen of this unified Italy was Queen Margherita.
That Margherita?
Maybe. She was doing a sort of unity tour around Italy, and by the time she reached Naples, where pizza was popular, she wanted something other than the fancy, her word, typically French food that was standard for her. She wanted something local, a commoner's meal. And the most well-known pizza chef was ordered to make pizzas for the queen and deliver them to her.
Ah.
He brought her three different kinds, including one with the colors of the newly adopted Italian flag. Red tomatoes, white mozzarella, and green basil. He later got a letter about how much she enjoyed that particular pizza, and the chef thusly named it after her, giving me according to this legend, my favorite type of pizza.
Ah.
The margarita.
The margarita pizza.
Mm-mm-mm. If we go back to post-Civil War U.S., signs began popping up for lunches put up, meant for tourists or others passing through. And these were intended for those that maybe didn't have much spending money, and they came in boxes for Sunday picnics. By the 1920s, restaurants might sell boxed lunches with sandwiches, salads, and ice cream. Still, most takeout options were situated near transition hubs, like train stations, and generally more for the working class.
Right.
Restaurants in big cities offered take-home specials, and again, oysters were a popular option. The wealthy would send a servant to go get their food. That was a common practice. And the takeout business itself was associated with African American women. We mentioned it for a bit in our fried chicken episodes, how they would often sell food from train stations or on the cars themselves. Of course, this is one of the only avenues available for African Americans to make money at the time, and also as a way for black customers to avoid segregation at restaurants.
Right.
Or sometimes segregated restaurants would only serve takeout to black consumers. And back to the oysters again. Well, takeaway oysters aren't really a thing anymore. The containers that held them were precursors to the Chinese takeout boxes that we know today.
Yeah.
The company that made them, they were called oyster pails originally. Bloomer Brothers of New York got their start in 1900. By 1977, though, they were called Foldpak, which is the company behind our current Chinese takeout container technology.
It makes perfect sense. You need something that's watertight and,
I know.
Oyster pails.
Oyster pails.
Oh, if only we hadn't totally destroyed the oyster population.
If only. Speaking of Chinese takeout, the first written reference to that in the U.S. comes from 1922 when a restaurant in Los Angeles called Kinchu Cafe claimed it was the only West Coast restaurant that would deliver real Chinese food.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. And delivery and takeout wasn't a thing only in the U.S. Accounts from U.S. soldiers in China and Japan detail lunches and boxes available on trains. By the 19th century in Mumbai, Daba Ala delivered homemade lunches to workers, as in homemade. And it's so efficient, it has some high-tech companies beat. The practice came about during British colonial rule, and it's really cool. One group of Walas retrieve the boxes of food to be delivered, and on the side of the boxes are colors that indicate which railway stations the box needs to pass through to arrive at their designated delivery station, where they are hand-sorted and delivered. Then the boxes make a return trip to be reused.
Yeah, frequently these round tins, these round metal tins that, yeah, are just iconic and wonderful. And,
yeah.
Oh.
I had so much fun reading about that.
Yes.
It's really amazing.
Meanwhile, back in the United States, two technologies would create a huge boom in delivery and or takeout after World War II. The television and the personal automobile.
Mm-hmm.
As the growing middle class bought cars and TVs through the 50s and 60s, spending less time, therefore, sitting down in restaurants and more time either at home in front of the TV or out traveling or even just cruising around, restaurants started advertising takeaway meals. If they had even ever offered sit-down meals. If you remember from our McDonald's episode.
Yes, McDonald's fact of the episode. Before adding indoor seating, McDonald's was known as McDonald's carry-out restaurants.
This let them keep costs down, and, you know, many other fast food chains followed suit until all that car culture created a desire for people to have people come in and
right.
sit down. In the early 50s, traditional restaurants that started offering takeout, sometimes called television meals, increased their sales 20 to 50% in a single year, according to industry data from that time.
That's pretty amazing.
But how did the pizza become so big?
Besides being delicious?
Besides that, it has to do with the soldiers who returned from Europe after World War II and the wave of popularity thus enjoyed by Italian restaurants in America. The New York Times ran an article in 1944 explaining one of Southern Italy's new implants, a pie made from a yeast dough and filled with any number of different centers, each one containing tomatoes. They explained that these curious treats could be ordered to take home, packed hot in special boxes. Speaking of pizzas, it might have been a pizza joint that offered the first free delivery service. A few years later in Los Angeles, one Casa de Amore would deliver pies for free after you met the $2.50 order minimum.
I'm familiar with this delivery minimum.
Mm-hmm.
In 1979, Domino's Pizza, an American fast food pizza chain, introduced a delivery guarantee promising 30 minutes or it's free. Fast forward to 1993. After facing multi-million dollar settlements stemming from Domino's delivery drivers involved in car accidents, a few with fatalities, and Domino's does away with the 30-minute guarantee. The company never outright said these car accidents were because delivery drivers were rushing to beat the 30-minute deadline. What the owner did say was he hoped that dropping the policy would fight, quote, public perception of reckless driving and irresponsibility. The current "you got 30 minutes" slogan is meant to be interpreted as the customer has 30 minutes to prepare themselves for a pizza in their face. But it could take longer. It'll take 30 minutes or longer.
Or longer.
But that's how long you have to prepare yourself. I went on such a Domino's tangent. We could do a whole episode on that particular company, I think, maybe in the future.
Yeah.
It's very fascinating.
Yes. Oh, definitely. Online ordering had popped up by about 1997. The New York Times, again, at the bleeding edge of all of this, published an article about a blooming online service out of Westchester, New York, that hosted menus for 40 restaurants and had a checkout system and used a third-party delivery service to get stuff from the restaurants to the customers. They reported that at the time, more than 500 people had visited the website.
500 more people? Egad, Lauren! My beating heart!
The New York Times also added, there is no charge to visit the website, but the customer pays the delivery fee, varying from $4 to $6, depending on the service used.
Oh, man. Times have changed.
Oh, 1997. You're great. That was near the beginning of the whole dot-com boom that was from about, say, 95 to 2001. Over the next few years, just tons of development and investment brought online services to the forefront, including online grocery shopping.
Yeah.
And, of course, grocery delivery is not like an internet age idea.
Right.
You know, before the spread of refrigeration technology to homes, families would have perishables like eggs, milk, and ice delivered regularly in small quantities for their small ice boxes.
Right.
The huge fridges and the personal vehicles of later decades squashed that industry and created the market for supermarkets. But the internet has brought grocery delivery back. Well, it did for like a couple years, sort of at first there. In its heyday in the late 1990s, a site called homegrocer.com was doing over $1 million a day in online grocery sales.
Wow.
But it would crash along with much of the digital market in the early 2000s. And attempts by existing chains like Safeway over the next few years would ultimately collapse, lacking profitability.
That reminds me of brief Harry Potter tangent. How her first Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, or Philosopher's Stone, where, depending on where you're from, was turned down by not more than one publisher.
Multiple.
Because she had the milkman delivery in the beginning. And they were like, this is so quaint and no one will understand. We can't connect with this. And then I'm sure today they're like, well.
They're like, well.
I guess people can connect to milk delivered to their homes. And we will return to grocery delivery in a minute. But first, another Domino's fact.
Yeah.
In 2008, Domino's makes yet one more appearance. Actually, no, there's another on our delivery food timeline when it rolls out its online pizza tracker. With this thing, you can track as your pizza is being made. The little pizza icon goes into the oven, and then after a predetermined 6 to 7 minutes, there is no one updating the tracker. Sorry to break anyone's heart about that. It's boxed and then goes out for delivery. I spent a lot of time in college watching this thing, hungry like a lion, watching its prey being delivered straight to its mouth.
I know that feeling.
Yeah. And here is something that I might cut out later, but I'm gonna record it now.
Perfect.
There is, as of, I think, last week, a sex toy that will order Domino's pizza after you orgasm. So, technology abounds.
That's, you know, there really is an internet answer for everything.
I am curious about, I guess you have to push the button. It doesn't, like, sense you orgasm. We shouldn't be talking about orgasms as much in the delivery food episode. Who knew it would come up at all? Meanwhile,
the iPhone debuted in 2007, ushering in the era of food delivery apps.
Ooh.
And the popularity of delivery has really only increased as access to the internet and smartphones has increased. This plays out in data that looks at delivery trends across countries with high online access like Sweden versus, say, areas of Latin America that are currently adopting these technologies.
Right.
And the capacity that these apps provide some restaurants to take orders is causing a bit of a, like, supply-demand breakdown. This one sandwich chain in Southern California reported having to turn off DoorDash during surge hours and thus has turned away over $500,000 in sales from just three restaurants during, like, less than a year period.
Right.
Due to their inability to keep up with orders. Restaurants that are able to keep up with the demand, even ones like the above, which have had to make changes to accommodate the influx, restaurants are reporting significant increases in sales, like up to 15%. Folks in the industry are even suggesting that new restaurateurs might start opening kitchens with no dine-in space, only drive-through windows. But instead of engaging with individual customers, they would be largely for delivery drivers.
Yeah.
Such a weird twist on the,
it,
like,
really is.
On the drive-through. And the spread of online technologies has even brought grocery delivery back again.
It has.
Amazon had been offering dry goods and then added fresh foods for delivery in select areas. Online ordering for in-store pickup debuted at chains, grocery chains like Publix in the early 20-teens. And then last year, Amazon purchased Whole Foods for $13.7 billion,
you know,
as just, you do.
Yeah.
Sam's Club just announced that they're going to start partnering with Instacart for same-day delivery, and Instacart already has partnerships with Albertsons, Kroger, and Costco, prompted by Amazon's move.
Wow. the other day I was in Publix, and there was a woman in front of me in checkout, and she worked for, I think they have their, Publix has their own specific order, or maybe it is Instacart. Either way,
yeah.
She worked for a grocery delivery service, and it was just funny to hear her conversing with the checkout people. Like, oh, how many more do you have today? Like, she's just going through the checkout over and over again.
Oh, my goodness.
And she was talking about coupons and how people are losing out on money because you can't use coupons on grocery delivery services. It was just an interesting seeing that in action.
Right, sure.
What a fascinating job. We still have some science for you.
Yes.
But first, we have one last quick break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with science. Technology.
The future?
Future.
Oh.
Perhaps. But first, we're going to start with the pizza saver.
The best technology ever.
It's sometimes called the pizza nipple. And it is that white thing with spears placed at the center of the pizza that, well, I thought it was to hold it together, but now I think...
It holds up the box.
Exactly, yeah. A patent for this thing was filed by Camilla Vitale in 1983. And she was not like an inventor necessarily. She just enjoyed a lot of pizza, had a big family, and was like, this is a problem. And the problem she was trying to solve was pizzas arriving with stripped cheese or smushed. Because of the steam coming off of a hot pizza, the top center of the box would sag and stick to the center of the pizza because there was no pizza saver there. And when you open it, in all of your excitement, you rip the cheese off.
Oh.
Yeah. And... the pizza saver solved this problem. The patent says it can, quote, resist temperatures as high as about 500 degrees Fahrenheit or 260 degrees Celsius. And it has been slightly improved upon, but pretty much...
It's the same pizza saver?
Yeah, exactly. I think it costs 1 cent to make.
Oh, wow.
And they're trying to figure out, like...
How to make it better.
Yeah. But there's no
cheaper,
real way.
Cheaper, better. Yeah, they're like, no.
Yeah.
I always assumed when I was a child that These were like dollhouse toys.
Yeah, I think I read that in an article.
For me.
Yeah, somebody said they used it for Polly Pocket. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, no, waste not, want not. The pizza box has also gone through a lot of shifts technology-wise in order to keep the pizza's shape, to be stackable, and to retain heat. Pizza used to rely on corrugated cardboard boxes to keep the pizza warm, but Domino's, again, is credited with coming up with our current stackable, sturdier shape. But this advancement wasn't so great at delivering a warm, crispy product. Enter Ingrid Kosar in 1984. She was determined to solve this problem, and she went around to pizzerias with a probe to test pizza temperatures. I love that.
Yeah.
Domino's standard was 140 degrees Fahrenheit or 60 degrees Celsius for 45 minutes. That's what they were trying to achieve.
Okay.
And from the data she gathered, and she ate a lot of pizza, she patented the insulated delivery bag. It reduced temperature loss to 5 degrees Fahrenheit an hour. This meant that the steam would escape the box into the bag, allowing the pizza to stay both warm and crispy. After a contract with the U.S. government to keep pizzas warm for soldiers and a revamp that was in partnership with Domino's, Kosar filed for bankruptcy in 2010, but it was discharged. And from what I understood is maybe not making a comeback, but, you know, still moving along. She had a lot of competition from foreign competitors. Pizza technology. So much of delivery technology is pizza technology, I found.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just so big. It's so such a large portion of the market.
Yeah.
So what about the incredible future of food delivery? Will it involve drones?
Will it?
Currently, signs point to maybe.
What?
A few drone delivery stunts started making headlines around the world around 2013 or so. Pizza in Mumbai, Coca-Cola in Singapore, sparkling wine within this one resort hotel in Sausalito. And let us never forget Silicon Valley's Taco Copter.
Never forget.
Taco Copter. Amazon even floated the idea of drone delivery. But the whole concept seemed relegated to mere stunt status due to a couple of things. Flight regulations from bodies like the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, here in the States and elsewhere. Also, the tech was still clumsy. Lightweight batteries don't last long enough. The carrying capacity isn't great enough. Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But big companies like Bell Technologies and Boeing, big, are working on the tech end, possibly for contracting to the military first. And their level of influence may sway organizations like the FAA to open it up for commercial use.
Wow.
There is one service currently available, as far as I understand, in Reykjavik, Iceland, that's already using drones to circumvent the city's bay, shaving some 20 minutes off of delivery times between the two halves of the city. Couriers will drop deliveries off at one drone hub for launching, and other couriers deliver the food by bike or foot on the other end. And they're planning, though, for home deliveries sometime in the future, supposedly.
Ooh.
I don't know about that. And all of this could be a serious boon for the environment if it takes off.
Oh.
Truck and personal gas-powered vehicle transportation create just a lot of greenhouse gas emissions, and large electronic drones could really help due to their energy efficiency. Personal electric vehicles and electric trucks would also be good, but not as good as drones.
Huh.
Efficiency-wise. Yeah. Oh, and one more that I forgot to write down, but I saw at CES this year, which is a consumer, it's a media place these days, but it's about electronics and
right.
stuff. Pizza Hut was showing off their concept for a automated pizza delivery vehicle.
Right. Yeah. I remember that
self-driving car just for pizzas.
Oh my goodness!
Which apparently there's a Black Mirror episode that's kind of about. I haven't watched that one, but I don't know. I guess the article
pizza
that
delivery.
The article that I read about it was like, it is the stuff of nightmares. Have they not watched Black Mirror? And I was like, oh, I haven't either. But okay. So, yeah.
Well, I don't recall any pizza delivery nightmare episode, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Sure.
There is something kind of menacing about it. I just see this truck and there's nobody in there. There's but nobody. Pizza. I don't know. Could be wonderful.
I don't know. Yeah, it sounds sort of beautiful to me.
It has potential for either, I think.
Yeah.
Yes.
As with all technology, it's how you use it.
That is true. That is true, Lauren. That brings us to the end of our delivery takeout episode.
It does.
Yes.
And means it's time for listener mail.
Oh, that was nice.
Yeah.
Dominique wrote, I just listened to your ketchup episode and thought you should know of the Canadian ketchup saga in the 2010s.
Okay.
Heinz had a tomato plant in Leamington, Ontario, and decided to shut it down in 2013 after a change in ownership. The plant had over 700 full-time employees, and the manufacturing accounted for a huge portion of the Ontario tomato crop. So Ontarians were pretty upset about the whole thing. Meanwhile, French's, who made mustard, started producing ketchup. Their ketchup sales were slow as they were lower on the shelf than Heinz. But they used real sugar, so they appealed to the anti-high fructose corn syrup crowd, and used Canadian tomatoes, although didn't push that through marketing. The French's sales were so slow that our major supermarket chain, Loblaws, oh man, I don't know how to pronounce that. I hope that was close, was about to pull it off their shelves until one viral Facebook post by Brian Fernandez touting the source of the tomatoes changed everything.
Huh.
People started calling into their grocery store demanding French's ketchup, and a supply shortage meant it soon sold out. The sales have gone through the roof due to people wanting to support Canadian farmers, and even I have been buying French's ever since. French's even moved a bottling plant from the USA to Canada because of the niche sales here. And she sent us a news article about it, and I had not heard about it. I've never seen French's ketchup.
I don't know if we have it either. I'm not sure.
But it was very, very enjoyable and fascinating read. And thanks to Emily, she also wrote in to us about this, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jordan wrote, I recently recalled an embarrassing moment I had as a child in elementary school when you were discussing the papers or foils that line cupcakes. I accidentally ate one. A classmate of mine had a birthday, and per elementary school tradition, they brought in cupcakes to share with the class. I had never had a cupcake before this day. I was probably in the second or third grade and did not know about the paper that you're supposed to peel off. So I ate the whole thing.
Oh.
After I finished my cupcake, I was looking around and noticed every other student had peeled and discarded that cupcake paper on their desk, and I didn't have one to throw away. I think my teacher and a few students noticed. I was embarrassed at the time, but looking back on that day is hilarious. In my defense, the cupcake paper does get oily from the batter and is the same color and very similar in texture to an overbaked cupcake.
Yeah.
I also recently told this to my mom, and we could not stop laughing. She apologized for not giving me proper cupcake etiquette in my youth.
Haven't we all been there? Embarrassing elementary school.
Or adulthood.
Yeah, you're right.
I still feel that way in some fancy restaurants.
Oh my gosh, me too.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to blatantly stare at the person next to me to try to figure out.
Absolutely.
Protocol. Thanks to both of them for writing in.
Yeah.
And if you would like to write to us, we would love to hear from you. Our email is foodstuff@howstuffworks.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at FoodstuffHSW or on Instagram at Foodstuff. We hope to hear from you. Thank you so much to our amazing producer, Dylan Fagan. Thanks to y'all for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.